FSN Radio.
It's all about what's next.
Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports.
The Financial Survival Network.
It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. You might even be watching us on our YouTube channel. Well, what do you say? Gold, it's a new intraday high. The former high was a 1921, I believe, and change. We hit 1948 today, and it's holding steady. And gold and silver going parabolic. With great bull markets come great responsibility, because you got to figure out, when do you get out? When is the time? And that's not anything that anyone can really tell you. Some people are better at it than others. It's a question of cycles. There's a lot of factors involved. When do you think the exit point is going to be to get out of precious metals? We'd like to know your opinion. We're going to be having a contest for you to guess the price of gold coming up on August 13th of 2020, what the price will be that day. That is the 49th anniversary of Nixon closing the gold window. And well, our good friend from dollarcollapse.com is with us now. Happy Monday, John.
Hey, Carrie. Yeah, you remember back in March when gold and silver were in the sixth year of a bear market? This changed in a hurry, didn't it? Gold is now, like you said, at near its all-time high. And silver is outperforming gold dramatically, just lately. So, a few things about this. First, with something like silver, which is the thing that has everybody excited right now, there's a good part and a bad part to it being a small, highly volatile market. And the good part is that it takes off right away. You know, when it goes, it really goes, and it can just spike. And the bad part is kind of the same thing, because you can't time something like that. You just have to be in something like silver and then wait till it takes off. But there's no way to predict the timing ahead of time. So it might take you, 2 or 3 years of just sitting there before it spikes. But if you try to get in as it's spiking, you can't do it. You can't buy silver, physical silver at least, at a price that is profitable right before it takes off, because you got to pay such a high premium. You know, the people who bought silver for a big part of this year are still down, because they paid such high premiums for their silver coins. The best time to buy gold and silver, especially silver, is 2 years before they take off, because that's when you can get them with nice low premiums, and then you make money when they go up. But now the question becomes, what would derail the precious metals bull market? Because it looks like all the fundamentals are in place, right? You've got every big government in the world just pouring newly created currency into the market. And that traditionally is good for, it's good for pretty much everything. You're seeing stocks up now. Real estate is spiking for some reason. And gold and silver are riding along on this wave of liquidity. So, by the way, with real estate, who in their right mind buys houses in the middle of a recession? I don't understand why house prices are going up right now. But for gold and silver, I think the big risk right now is another stock market crash like we saw in March, because stocks are wildly overvalued. The economy is slowing down right now. The whole V-shaped recovery scenario is looking like it's not true, looking like we're going to bump along the bottom, or maybe even decline some more from the V bottom. And if that happens and it impacts corporate earnings, that it might impact stock prices, because stocks are ridiculously expensive right now. We have more stocks on the S&P 500 trading at 10 times sales than we had back in 1999, when the tech stock bubble was making everything trade at crazy valuations. So we could easily see a flash crash in the stock market. And I think that would derail gold and silver. Everything would get sold along with stocks, because, if your stocks are tanking and you've got some gold and silver, that's a place where you can raise cash, right? Because they're still up. Well, that makes them go down too. So that's the big risk. But it would just be a temporary risk, because governments would respond to a, bear market in stocks the way they always do with even easier money. So that's when we get the negative interest rates. And that's when we get deficits of 20% of GDP instead of 10% of GDP. So all that stuff would happen out there. And you'd see gold and silver rocket back up again, just like they did in March, just like they did in 2008. So it would be a temporary crash. But see, that's going to test our character if that happens, because, you know, you want to be buying there, right? If that scenario plays out, just like you wanted to be buying at the bottom back in March, gold and silver, not stocks necessarily. And, you know, we'll see if we have the courage to do that when the time comes. But in the meantime, should we be raising cash now in order to prepare for that? Or should we be just riding along? See, you know, bull markets are stressful. They're not fun.
Yeah.
Because they create a new set of big decisions that you have to make that have really serious consequences. Because if you get out too soon and this thing continues to go up, you know, gold is going to 5,000, possibly 10,000. Silver is going to 100, possibly 200. So if we get out now in anticipation of buying in cheaper 3 months from now and it doesn't happen, then, yeah, you know, I don't know. I find this stuff both a lot of fun and kind of stressful, which I guess is how gambling works, right? You know, it's a lot of fun. It's very, you know, exciting, but there's always the choice or the chance that you're making the wrong decision at any given time. So anyhow, we should just be able to relax and enjoy this, because not only are gold and silver up, but these little mining stocks are just going crazy right now. You know, 15, 20% gains has become normal in the explorer space in precious metals. And again, there's no reason for that to stop, barring that big stock market crash that takes gold and silver down, because they're, you know, the explorers are still extremely cheap in terms of how much gold they have in the ground or silver, which allows you to price their stock per ounce of metal that they own. And if you do that, you get, you know, crazy low numbers, like, you know, 50 cents per ounce of silver and $150 per ounce of gold. You know, numbers like that are common in that space. And because of that, there's a lot of upside. So if this thing continues, you know, if we see gold go to 3,000, which it could and should from here, just based on fundamentals, that takes silver up to 50 to 75, like you were saying, and that would take the miners up even more. So that's out there somewhere. And the only question is there another flash crash looming in between today and that day? And probably the best way to play it is a stressful way, but the best way to play it is just be long and strong, you know, just ride out whatever corrections there are, and use dips as a buying opportunity, because that's the dominant psychological, the dominant mindset in a bull market is buy the dip. And that's the correct way to approach bull markets until they change. But as long as, you know, all the fundamentals are in place, buying things when they get a little cheaper tends to work. So, you know, if you can stomach the 50 to 70% drop that might happen, then you do want to be buying things when they get a little cheaper from here.
And, you know, we've had a parabolic move effectively in silver. It doubled from its March low. I think it was at 1180, although you could never really buy it for that because the premiums went to 60+%. And then gold is up dramatically since in the past year. I mean, I was looking at the numbers on Kitco, and they were amazing. 30-day change is up nearly 10%. 1 year change, it's up 526.20 the ounce, 37%. So you wonder, well, how much longer can this go on? And the answer is the market is going to figure that out. But it's always dangerous to buy when you have parabolic moves. I'm sure all those people who bought Tesla at 1800 now are sitting there very unhappy when it's at mid 1400s. But on the other hand, the underlying trend, the monetary trend, is really favorable to precious metals. And what I think we're seeing, John, is we're starting to see commodity price inflation. We're seeing high copper prices, nearly $3 a pound, and oil which nobody seems to want. It's totally, we got way too much of it around. It still managed to hit $42, could be going higher, not as a result of supply and demand, but as a result of declining purchasing power of the dollar. It's a little too early to confirm that trend, but it is looking like that somewhat, isn't it?
Well, the dollar has been the negative story of the last month or so. It's down pretty dramatically. It's looking at one of the worst Julys in history. And you know, they'll sort out why that happened later, you know, with some hindsight. But it looks like now people are just they're getting frustrated with the situation in the U.S. You know, the civil unrest and the fact that. It's perceived that the pandemic thing isn't going well, and we're you know, doing the same monetary things that everybody else is doing. We're creating huge amounts of new currency and just dumping it into the market and running huge deficits, and so maybe the dollar isn't such an attractive currency in that kind of a situation. And that's contributing to commodities going up here, because they're going up in terms of dollars, which are going down. That makes things go up when you change the measuring stick. So that's part of the gold and silver story, but only part of it. I mean, gold and silver are at record levels everywhere against almost every currency right now. So the dollar, it was the laggard in that sense. And now that gold is at a record in dollars, you know, we've basically just joined the global club in terms of monetary policy and its effect on precious metals. But, you know, from a gold miner's standpoint right now, think about what it means when gold goes up by $500 in a year. You've brought a lot of mines online on the assumption that you would operate them in an environment where gold was $1,200. And you'd do it profitably, marginally profitably, but you'd still make money. It's worth bringing that mine online at $1,200. But now, all of a sudden, you've got more than one third extra coming in from every ounce that you sell, and your costs haven't really changed very much. In some cases, your costs have gone down. So all of a sudden, you are a profitable company. And that's one of the things that's going to make the mining industry, or the gold and silver miners at least, interesting in the year ahead, because they're going to be reporting phenomenal comparisons. In other words, this year is going to be better than last year in terms of earnings and sales, and next year will be better than this year. So that's the kind of thing that gets people excited and ought to make gold miners one of the hottest sectors in the stock market going forward.
Don't forget, there was an article, I don't remember, Zero Hedge, about Robin Hooders are finding mining stocks. I think I sent you that one, remember?
Yeah.
And, you know, all you need is a couple hundred thousand millennials saying, wow, this could be the next Bitcoin, and sinking their money. And right now it's a couple thousand. There's actually a site that tracks what stocks Robin Hooders are buying. And there was roughly 2,000 of them in one stock. I don't remember the name of it. But hey, we got interesting times ahead. Well, moving on with other news, Portland is just, it's becoming the Minneapolis of the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, well, Portland and Seattle are the two biggest U.S. cities, or the closest U.S. cities to me. And so it's really scary to watch what's happening there. There was a video on Portland that I just saw yesterday, where they're going around downtown talking to small business owners and taping what the streets look like now and everything. And it looks like a ghost town in the daytime. And most of the stores are boarded up, and they're interviewing small business owners who say, you know, I've been here 30 years and this is my town, and I don't want to have to close, but I'm going to have to close because nobody's coming in anymore. And if I don't board up my windows, the windows will be broken. It feels like in a lot of ways we've just given up here, where big city mayors can't figure out how to stop these protests from turning violent. without instigating violence themselves. And they, you know, they sympathize, a lot of these mayors,
they're complicit.
Sympathize with the protesters. Yeah, so they are complicit if they pull the police off.
Yeah.
If they don't stop people from looting and breaking windows and things like that. And in Seattle, they put a lot of limitations on non-lethal police activities. In other words, you can't use pepper spray, et cetera, et cetera. And the police chief sent an open letter to businesses in downtown Seattle saying that, hey, you know, our hands are tied now, so we can't protect you. So you're on your own. You know, what does that mean? That's just, I think, pretty unique in American history, where we just back off and say, you know, you guys just do whatever you feel like. Downtown. And then it's kind of the same thing with the whole pandemic, where, you know, there are these random rules being put in place and then lifted.
Arbitrary. Arbitrary.
And people are kind of, you know, they obey the ones they can't get out of obeying, but basically they're just getting on with life now in a lot of cases. So we've kind of given up on any coherent strategy, which might be the best thing to do in the end. You know, we'll find out later on if maybe we should have just let this thing burn, you know, and developed herd immunity and moved on from there.
Oh, for sure. For sure. That's what we should have done. I mean, there's no question. There's just an article today by Issues and Insights. And what we find is Florida had 173 reported deaths the other day, COVID deaths. But the day that on that actual day, the number of deaths that occurred was 19. They had reported all these deaths, and this is like the latest spike. You know, one day there was like 80 deaths, but there were only 33 deaths. And then, you know, you see it. And New York and New Jersey, they were having thousands of deaths at their peak. So the other thing is they're mixing the tests between viral tests and antibody tests, which could show that somebody was recently infected, or they might be showing that the person was infected a while ago and asymptomatic, but they're mixing those together. And you got to wonder if it's all political or what. And then some guy in Palm Beach County dies in a motorcycle accident, and he's a COVID death. And then another guy dies of Parkinson's disease. He's a COVID death. And then just this is CBS, not exactly alternative media here. The local CBS affiliate checks out the deaths in Palm Beach County and finds on the spreadsheet only 169 were pure COVID caused deaths. Everything else was muddled comorbidities, et cetera, et cetera. And so the numbers that you're looking at are really skewed. You can't really come to any firm conclusion other than there's something going on. But just going back to Seattle and Portland, you know, Mayor Wheeler, idiot, he's demonstrating with the protesters. They hate him. They're telling him, resign, resign. Then they start getting violent. He's still there. He's technically the police chief now, because the police chief or the commissioner, whatever it is, runs it there, quit a while back. So the mayor has got the responsibility, and he gets tear gassed in the midst of it all. And he looks like an idiot. And if there's no will to protect your city, the first role of government is supposedly to protect from enemies, both within and without. Well, obviously, their definition of an enemy is a little bit different than Joe Sixpack's, who sees people busting into his store, looting his inventory and his goods, or hers for that matter, and then no police intervention, no interference. This is going to lead to militias, John, because self-help, self-defense is really the only way for these people to protect their property. Then what's going to happen then when they're there with their AR-15s and the crowd charges and they kill a bunch of them, which under the law, they're justified, but it's totally due to the abject neglect of Seattle and of Portland and of other countless other cities across the country.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Silver One Resources is an exploration and development company backed by strategic investors Eric Sprott and SSR Mining. At Silver One's Candelaria Mine project in Nevada, there is already a historic resource estimated at 127 million ounces of silver, which Silver One is developing and advancing. The company's Phoenix Silver project, located within the Arizona Silver Belt, is an early-stage exploration project on which native silver vein fragments have been discovered near surface. One grab sample assay an astounding 14,688 ounces per ton. Yes, that's right, ounces, not grams. Silver One has tremendous exploration potential, is extremely leveraged to the price of silver, and is cashed up and poised to increase shareholder value. Silver One trades in New York under the ticker SLVRF and in Toronto under the ticker SVE. To learn more, go to silverone.com. That's silverone.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Yeah, this incoherence is really scary because it means we just don't know. You know, we have no idea what we're supposed to be doing. We have no idea what the right answer is, either politically or in terms of the economy or in terms of the pandemic. You know, we just don't know. And I think the rest of the world, that's probably part of the dollar going down lately, is the rest of the world is watching this. And incoherence is financially very scary. You don't want to own assets that are linked to policies that you don't understand and that the people in charge don't seem to understand. And, you know, it's our situation right now. Maybe we get it together later, but it's kind of hard to imagine now that we've got a presidential election coming up.
Well, that might be what it's all about, John. You know, is the election making the country look like it's out of control so that it reflects badly on Trump? But I think the fact that this has become the left and the Democratic Party's campaign platform really doesn't bode well for them, because I think the average person doesn't want crime, doesn't want riots. They want a safe environment for themselves and their families to raise their families, or you to make a living, and or you to enjoy life. It's hard to enjoy life when they're burning down your city that you've spent your whole life there trying to build up. I don't think it bodes well. I think it's all election politics, but it's twisted. And look what Matt Taibbi's latest article really kind of sums it all up, doesn't it?
Matt Taibbi is just awesome. He's kind of like my own personal Fox News or MSNBC, you know, in the sense that everything he says, I agree with, you know, his latest is called The Left is the New Right. And he starts out talking about how, you know, left-wing journalists, which is to say most journalists, used to love it when these little podunk towns would try to, you know, ban the teaching of evolution and impose basically religious ideas on the science classroom. And you know, there would be a big court case, and the reporters loved making fun of the hayseeds from these small towns. Well, now it's reversed. The left is kind of the anti-scientific part of the country now. And they, you know, they're coming up with ideas that are just either very debatable or not supported by anything, and just trying to impose it on everybody else. But the press is silent on this because they don't know how to handle crazy stuff coming from the left, because they perceive that as their, you know, that's their people. And so they don't know how to cover it. So it's not being covered, but there's some amazing stuff going on out there. Like did you see the Smithsonian? The Smithsonian came out with a report on quote unquote whiteness. And they characterized, what was it? It was rational thought, mechanical time, which is to say clocks, and hard work as characteristics of white supremacy. They had to take that down. They had to apologize for that and take it down. But that's the kind of stuff that is being spoken of from the left with a straight face now. And you know, the old saying that most people handle adversity pretty well. But if you want to see who they really are, give them some power. And that's what's kind of happening now with the left.
Yeah.
Where they feel immune to consequence and are free to speak their thoughts, you know, the things that they have been keeping to themselves from all this time. And you're seeing it's authoritarian and creepy at the same time. You know, there's a lot of stuff that is being pushed now from the left that is just, you know, bafflingly anti-scientific and authoritarian. And it's because right now they feel like they're able to speak their minds and get away with it. And, you know, we've seen some of that come from the right in the past. Well, now it's coming from the left, and it's very scary. And hopefully there's a backlash. You know, Matt Taibbi's work is a good example of it. Glenn Greenwald is somebody who's leaning against stuff like this. The guys who run the Hill Rising show on YouTube are also standing up to this stuff, but it's hard because unless you have a platform that's untouchable, you can be canceled in this world. You know, you can have pressure brought to bear on your employer who then caves and fires you, and you're out of work and there's no way to get a new job because you're, you know, you're poisoned now because the mob has turned against you.
Yes.
And, you know, I want to say that, oh, well, you know, this is, look at what our generation did in the 1960s. You know, we did some extremely radical, in retrospect, very stupid stuff. And 10 years later, we're selling insurance and working on Wall Street and everything. You know, it's a phase that you go through. But this time around, so much of academia has been captured by this already that, you know, these guys already have their jobs for life if you're a tenured professor. So there's not going to be any pressure to actually produce something of value in the real world for a lot of the people who have influence with these kinds of ideas. So I'm not sure where it leads, but it's a really scary thing to watch. And again, it's the kind of thing that scares you about the big systems and leads to an interest in real assets. You know, the financial attitude and the investment thesis that flows from stuff like this is definitely load up on gold and silver, because you are not going to be able to trust anything that comes out of the government if these guys end up in charge.
Yeah. This is a uncharted territory, to say the least, and a bit scary as well. Hey, one thing we missed, the clean tech boom also going back is huge boom for silver as well, with electric cars and silver switches and all these things. So
solar panels.
Yeah, yeah. Solar panels. Well, and
you know, Kerry, we could spend a whole show just on silver. That story is so good from so many different angles. Because remember, you mentioned the Robinhood guys, right, who are buying mining stocks now. The government just announced they were going to send out another batch of $1,200 checks. Which means all the Robinhood traders are going to get some more capital really soon.
All right.
Well, buy mining stocks.
And you know, like you saw that article in Zero Hedge, you know, the HFT, high frequency traders, are there like Citadel, gobbling up all the pay for order flow from Robinhood and giving them $90 million a year, and then doing the ultimate front end, you know, front ending all of the Robinhooders. And stopping them out and whatever else they do. And,
you know, that,
it's just unbelievable.
Kerry, that is a crime, front running.
I thought
and
so.
Somehow these big companies make billions of dollars from doing this thing, which is illegal. You know, it's at a minimum unethical. And in some forms, it's illegal. You go to jail for stuff like that, or you get fined for stuff like that. No finance people go to jail anymore, but still, this is just crazy. But anyhow, we talked about that. When I was afraid that Charles Schwab, who has most of my money, doesn't charge for stock trading anymore, and how are they going to make money? Well, it turns out that's how they do it, too. They make money by selling our order flow to people who profit from it by front running us. So
front running and back running and triggering stops
and
all this stuff.
And there's a whole
fake
set
trades,
of techniques.
That, fake trades that don't exist. And Robinhood's a godsend for these people. It's the reverse Robinhood effect. We talked about that. Hey, Three Gorges Dam, they're now having a third phase of flooding in China, and the level of the reservoir keeps going up. You know, what's interesting, John, is they discharge these dams in anticipation of these major floods. And what happens when they do that is that the cities below the dam downstream get flooded and people are wiped out. But they, if they announce that they're going to discharge water and give the people warning to get to higher ground and get your stuff out, then under Chinese law, they have to pay compensation. But if they do it in the middle of the night and just say, hey, natural disaster, they don't pay any compensation to these poor, hapless folks who see their entire livelihoods wiped out and everything they own. And a lot of deaths occur because there's no warning. So this is like a really perverted legal system the Chinese pretend to have there. It's really hurting these people. We're going to see how well built the Three Gorges Dam is, but it almost doesn't matter because they have to discharge so much water downstream to stop the dam from flooding, from collapsing, if in fact that will work, that it's as if the dam collapsed anyway if you're downstream, and they funnel the water to these smaller communities to try to spare the cities like Wuhan and others, Nanking, that are in the flow. And it's just mass injustice, and it's as bad as sending COVID patients, infected patients, to nursing homes. I mean, really, when you get down to it, it's kind of wanton brutality that we all know the CCP is guilty of and capable of at a moment's notice when it suits their interests.
Well, you know, and this is emblematic of a bigger issue around the world, which is that we have really short memories. And if something hasn't happened for 50 years or 100 years, we tend to assume that it'll never happen because it hasn't happened in our living memory. And so then we build stuff where, you know, the 1,000-year flood is definitely going to happen. And it doesn't mean it'll happen 1,000 years from now. It means it'll happen sometime in the next 1,000 years. And or the, you know, the Cat 5 hurricane or the big earthquake, all of that stuff is, you know, a natural part of the earth. It, those things happen naturally, and they happen kind of sort of periodically, but you can't predict exactly when. And if they haven't happened recently, we tend to build, you know, I live on the Olympic Peninsula now in Washington State, where there's, you know, this giant earthquake followed by a big volcano. Tsunami is supposed to come at some point, you know, and it's overdue in terms of past cycles. And, you know, the whole East Coast with these big cities has a big hurricane. One of these days, there's a Cat 5 hurricane with Miami's name on it.
Yeah.
And you know, everywhere you look, there's something like that. So big natural disasters are just going to be part of our lives now as populations grow and we build these big mega cities on earthquake faults and things like that. And so this is a good example of it. There hasn't been a big flood like this one in China for a really long time, but historically they've happened. So it looks like this is just, you know, it's time for the periodic, gigantic, long stretch of rainstorms to happen, which causes a big unmanageable flood. But the difference is this time there is 100 million more people than last time. And there's this gigantic dam that is building up the pressure so that instead of the flood just kind of happening gradually over a period of days or weeks or months, a big chunk of it is going to happen all at once if that dam breaks. And there is nothing anybody can do about that right now. It either stops raining or something really bad happens. And, you know, it hasn't stopped raining for like a month, right? I remember you mentioning this, not last week, maybe the week before, or maybe the week before that, when it was already a potential disaster, and it hasn't stopped raining since then.
Yeah, so it's frightening, especially if you live in China, down from the dam. But all of it, I mean, multiple rivers, all their reservoirs are overflowing. Dikes are collapsing. They're even blowing up dams to relieve some of the pressure. I don't know what's going to happen. But if it's going to happen, this is the time it's going to. They say this flood will peak tomorrow on the 28th, but we'll see about that. Anyways, I guess that is it. All the problems of the world. Well, one protection, as always, is gold and silver. And that's what I would look to. And that's what John's looking to. Anyways, that is it for this week. Make sure you take a look at John's site, dollarcollapse.com, our site, Financial Survival Network. Sign up for both our free newsletters here. And John, I like the traffic we're getting on the site all over. It's just, I haven't seen it in 10 years like this. And no doubt it's going to get more so because we were the ones that called it a long time ago. And here we are now. Anyways, John, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Gary. Enjoy the ride.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.